Welcome back. No Willard today. It's Dibs and Grandy with you here on Willard and Dibs. And we've got a special guest joining us now here on the River Islands guest line. It is Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard. You listen to his podcast, The TK Show. It's on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And one of his most recent episodes with head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, Kyle Shanahan, that dropped just a couple of days ago. We've been playing bits and pieces of it here on the show throughout the week. If you haven't heard the whole thing, I do recommend going and giving it a listen. Tim, thanks for coming on again. Grandy and Dibs with you. Appreciate the time. How's it been down in Santa Clara to kick off training camp?
Yeah, not too bad. I wasn't down there today. I was there yesterday, of course, and the day before that to the Shanahan Lynch presser, and then talk to Kyle afterwards. The weather's been fine, a little mild, actually not too hot. And, there's some energy there. There's a lot of young players. That's what strikes you in the first thing. There's just a lot of young bodies out there, a few less familiar faces, but then some of the familiar faces are out there too. But more than anything, you see Michael Williams, you see Nick Martin, you see, C.J. West, you see all these guys. It's different. There's a different energy to it when you see younger players out there. Obviously they have to prove themselves though.
Yeah, they do. And I mentioned your conversation with Kyle Shanahan. It's available again on the TK Show. I'm curious what you thought was the most intriguing thing that Kyle told you. If you could just point to a single thing that you heard from him, what would that be?
I guess so. The big picture, we know what happened in the offseason. We know all the players that they lost or discarded. And what just for the first time, Shanahan, and I've been critical of it, and I'll still be critical of some of it, but he really put it together for me. Like, this is what they were looking at. And I've not heard them say this like this. They're basically starting another three-year cycle like they started in 2018. 2017, he and Lynch take over, and they just got to redo everything. And they didn't really think of their era starting until 18 when they started accumulating some players they really could use, build foundational players. And that launched this run from then till, let's go to the 2023 season when they get the Super Bowl again. And then it kind of busts up again in 2024 last year for various reasons. They kind of do a roster payroll cleanse. And this, to them, is the year one of a new three-year cycle. And the players that were no longer on the team, in their minds, their logic would not have helped them in year two or year three of this cycle. And maybe you don't get the Super Bowl this year, but you get a shot at doing it in year two, year three. That really made sense to me, and maybe it was logical if you looked at it, but as it was happening, I didn't feel it quite that logical, that structural, and for Shanahan to get it, put it down that clearly. I think he and Lynch kind of figured it out as well. I don't think this was exactly the plan to start this offseason, at least to do it as dramatically as they did. Deebo Samuel, Talano, Hufunga, Jalen Moore, Aaron Banks, and we know the names, Jordan Mason, Bing, 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 all these guys. Deebo Samuel, but I think the philosophy of it, I had not really felt football-wise. And to be sitting across from Shanahan, asking him about it, and him spelling it out, that he really felt it coming in the middle of the 2023 season, not last season when it all fall apart. He felt it coming in 2023. They were still going to go try to do it again in 2024 because they didn't have to pay Purdy till this year, but he felt it kind of loosening then. And last year kind of was the disruption year, and this is now year one of a new three-year cycle, or they're hoping more than 3 years. That was really interesting to me.
And when you look at this three-year cycle, Tim, and you start to take a look at the draft where five guys were drafted on defense, and you bring back Robert Saleh, and you bring in Gus Bradley, a couple of veteran defensive minds, do you think that that is where Kyle Shanahan is looking to start? You've got an offense that already had some drafted players last year. Is it more about the defense this year that needs to be a part of that three-year cycle?
Yeah, I think so. That's where the restart really is, defensive line for sure. And we know how much Shanahan and Lynch value the defensive line. One of the reasons they wanted this job was because they had Armstead and Buckner already there. Now you have Bosa as kind of the foundational piece, and you got to figure out who else is around that. And, yeah, I do think the refresh – the redo is mostly on defense, and he's very comfortable with Robert Saleh doing it because Saleh did it in 17 and 18 because that was not a great defense, as we know, even with Buckner and Armstead. They had to piece it together. They had to add people who could play that system. Richard Sherman was a big part of it. There were other players who were big parts of it. But, yeah, the the big redo, you know, where did the team really fall apart last year? It was on the defense. It was a run defense, which is what all defenses pride themselves on, fell apart. They had guys who were not doing the job, or they were hurt. And it's just logically on offense, they do have Brock Purdy as a holdover. And, you know, you imagine at 25, 26, he's only getting better. You've just paid him a whole lot of money. You still have Trent Williams. You still have George Kittle. You still have, you know, Christian McCaffrey. So they should be okay on offense, at least with the quarterback for sure, and build it out from there. On defense, you got to redo it. But this has got to happen in camp. Like, this is what they're doing, is figuring out what they got on defense and figuring out where to put it. And I agree. You need the talent there. You can't just do it with stray pieces. You got to do it with the right people, and they have picked the right people. I think they're really talented. I mean, again, it's noticeable. Mykal Williams and Alfred Collins, 2 6-foot-5 guys on defensive line, are noticeable. You see them, and other people see them. You kind of congregate over there because there's so much size and so much speed. Can they stay healthy? Can they do it in real games? Can they stop the running back on 3rd and 1? We don't know that, but they got a shot at it with these guys, and I think that's what Shanahan feels.
Tim Kawakami with us here on Willard and Dibbs. Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard. You can hear his podcast, The TK Show. It includes a conversation with Kyle Shanahan earlier this week. You mentioned defense, obviously more questions than the offense, but the position group on offense that does have some questions is the wide receiver room. Of course, Ayuk coming back from his rough knee injury. You got a minor hamstring injury still with Ricky Pearsall. Maybe he comes off and he practices in full coming up on Sunday. But the other question is Juwan Jennings, who is looking for a contract, reworked contract, more money, more incentives, whatever it is. But he's been out there and practicing, and it's difficult for me to not think back to how this went down last year with Ayuk, who was a hold-in. How do you think this gets resolved? And is it easier for the Niners to maybe give Juwan what he wants, considering he's at practice and he's actually practicing on the field?
Absolutely. You know, I don't think anybody wanted a replay of the Ayuk thing. It was just so awkward for everybody. I think Shanahan even made a little quick reference to it when we were talking about Purdy, saying, you know, some guys don't even want to listen to a number till after camp starts. And that's kind of Ayuk. Like, the frustration on some part of the 49ers with Ayuk was he's making all this noise and he hasn't even given us a number. Like, we don't even know what the number is. That's the 49ers side. I would imagine the Ayuk side might argue differently, but it was just complete at odds with Ayuk all the way through camp, all the way to the eve of the season. And we know he did not start off very well after missing all of camp. Juwan Jennings is not doing it now. Different situation. He's not a, you know, first receiver. Probably he is right now, just given the absence they've had, but more of a, you know, complimentary, very solid first down maker, kind of a tough guy receiver, which means he's very valuable. But I think him reporting, him practicing, him making plays, him being there with Purdy makes it a lot easier for the 49ers. I say, like, there's a way to solve this. We know it's not going to be $20 million a year. That's not likely to happen. But they can guarantee him some money next year. They can make this a 3-year deal. They can jump up his salary. It's not that hard when the vibes are good. And Ayuk got his money last year, right? He got his money. It just happened in a very, very rough way. And I don't think anybody wanted to duplicate that. And I'll just say, if Jennings was holding in right now, I think 49ers might treat this very, very differently than they did with Ayuk. But they knew he wasn't. They like him. He likes them. This is where he should be. You just got to find a number where it works. You know, it could be like, you know, bump him up to $15 million this year from 7.5. Like, that, it isn't. They have the money to do it. He's going to be worth it. And maybe you guarantee him some of that money next year. And I just think there's a way to do this. And I think he is going down that path to proving what they already think of him, that they love him and they want him on this team and they'll reward him.
And I was thinking the same thing, Tim. Like, I thought that this almost helped his leverage, the fact that he's being a stand-up guy and he's not going about it with a hold-in or a hold-out, and he's out there trying to lead a group that, let's be fair, I mean, this is a very unproven group. And if you look around the wide receiver room right now with Juwan there, who else do you have that you can even count on who might be healthy and ready to go?
It's a Marcus Robinson, but who made some plays in day one, but we know he might be suspended. Likely he's going to be suspended for the start of the season. So then you start knocking down. Ricky Pearsall's not practicing yet with a hamstring. Jacob Cowing, you know, had a hamstring pull yesterday, so he'll be out for a while. You really start knocking down the line, it gets to be fourth round pick Jordan Watkins, who actually looks pretty good out there. We know that Shanahan is tough on rookie receivers. It's hard to tell. Is he going to stay healthy? All the questions we ask everybody, but he might be getting some time out there, guys. He might be their third wideout to start the season. You know, that's pending a DeMarcus Robinson suspension, and we don't know where Ricky Pearsall is going to be. But, man, if I had to say who might be their, you know, first receiver coming off the bench, you know, who isn't starting, it might be Jordan Watkins. Now, that is a little scary, I'm sure, for the 49ers again, because he's a rookie. You just don't know if he can do it. But that's how thin they are right now. They find a receiver, they find another, you know, like they're signing receivers, but I think it's mostly just for camp reps. I don't think they're going to be counting on these guys, but who knows, you know, if another receiver or two goes down, it could get to be, it's already pretty desperate, you know, pending the DeMarcus Robinson situation. It could get very, very desperate because you never know who's going to, you know, who's going to be healthy, who's going to be not. And I'll just say, just the way they're talking, I don't think Brandon Ayuk is going to be suiting up, let's just say, put pads on for quite some time. I would not expect him to practice in training camp. I would not expect him to be in the preseason games. I would not expect him to be available for like at least week 1, 2, 3. I think we're talking October maybe for Ayuk, and maybe even a little bit beyond that.
Tim, I'm curious. You were talking about how Shanahan walked you through kind of their plan for this offseason and what it means for this year and the opening of a new 3-year window. I think from the outside, there's a lot of opinions that this is a team that is now rebuilding, and maybe this is somewhat of a, not necessarily a lost year, but a year potentially before a year. What would you say to someone who thinks that this is a rebuilding team right now? The way that I feel, I mean, it's pretty difficult to rebuild when you have that big of a contract. You just hand it over to a starting quarterback. What would you say to someone who says this is a rebuilding team right now?
Yeah, in some ways, it's clearly not a total rebuild. As you mentioned, Purdy, Kittle, Trent Williams, McCaffrey, like they're Bosa, like they've got players who are not rebuilding players, right? They are not. They are middle of their careers, big money, top of the payroll guys. I would say that they retooled, and given this easy schedule, now I don't know if the schedule was part of their factoring. I would have gone the other way, saying we got this easy schedule. We can go 15-2. We keep everybody. That's a pathway to the Super Bowl. They did not do that. And by the way, the Super Bowl is at Levi Stadium. I would have thought that might have had something. They didn't do it. Okay, I've expressed my opinion on that. But they've got such an easy schedule that even getting rid of all these solid players and possibly risking some, you know, some very thin position groups, and you're counting on young players who may or may not be good or may not stay healthy. They still might win 11 games, guys. Like, this is a really easy schedule. It's the easiest schedule I've ever seen the 49ers have. You're playing the NFC South, not exactly filled with powerful teams, and the AFC South, not exactly filled with powerful teams. This is set up for them to win 10 games, I think. Like, it would be really crazy for them not to win 10 games, unless Purdy gets hurt or Bosa gets hurt. You know, obviously, those are pending those things. If you can say that, win 10, 11, get a wild card spot, maybe even threaten for the division, they're going to say we were not rebuilding. You know, we just kind of reset this. Now, I think we'll know in our own minds they are rebuilding parts of this team. But if they hit on their defensive draft picks, if Purdy is solid, if McCaffrey stays healthy, they should be all right. And it won't be like this complete desolation of talent. They still have talent. They looked terrible last year, but that's when a lot of people got hurt. I think they're good enough to be able to say, hey, it was a reset, and then when our young players are a little older, in a year or two, it will look like 2019 looked like. I don't know that that's going to happen. I'm saying I can understand that that's their argument. Now let's see if they're right.
Yeah, the opponents had a winning percentage of 415 last year, Tim, which is, yeah. I mean, dramatically poorer than what it was the year before, when their opponents had a winning percentage of about 500, but they went on to win almost 60% of their games and all the rest disadvantage they had. So I'm kind of with you. They could maybe even sleepwalk their way into 10 wins. I want to get your thoughts on the Jonathan Kuminga. I don't even know if it's a saga. I don't even know what it is, Tim. Here we are in late July, and he's yet to really come out and have resolution, and his agent yesterday on social media said our camp, and I love the use of camp, but their camp never turned down $30 million a year. Where are we with the Kuminga conundrum, as Grandy calls it?
Yeah, it continues. The conundrum continues. it's a stuck place right now, is because the Warriors aren't going to pay him $30 million a year because over a five-year deal. I don't know that it was ever offered. I know it was reported it was offered. I don't think it was, but, you know, something in that ballpark. But he doesn't fit that now because they can't for sure know where he fits with the Jimmy Butler, Steph Curry situation. But they want to maintain his value, so they're not, you know, they want to, if someone wants to trade for him, that's fine, but you have to meet what the Warriors want for him. And it's not exactly been blockbuster because, again, they can match any contract offer that he receives. Nobody has the cap space to just sign him out, right? This is a tricky situation. It's been proven to be tricky. If Kuminga had an incredible market, I think he would have been traded by now. If the Warriors were absolutely right and he wasn't worth very much, I think he would have come back on a very short-term deal by now at a lower number. It's something in the middle. In the middle, it gets tricky. So I think, you know, they're just going to have to play it out and play it. I don't know when there's an end to this, but as I said, I think going into it, and maybe going into it, I thought that he was going to be traded. I thought there would be a hotter market for him. There just wasn't. So now that there isn't much of a market that we can tell, maybe it'll heat up again. He's a very talented player. But the way it looks like, I've been saying for like a month now, like I would guess he's coming back on a short-term deal and then maybe look to be traded. Because I think he wants to be on another team. I think he does. And I think the Warriors have different opinions on this if you ask different members. But I think the consensus probably is if he would be better off be traded if they could get something back for him. That just isn't the situation right now. So you might have to wait into January or February before you can do the ideal situation. That's just the clunkiness of what this is. And maybe if he comes back on a multi-year deal that isn't breaking the bank, he plays great for the Warriors. And maybe that changes the dynamic. That is entirely possible. I think they are certainly open to that. I think Kuminga is partially open to that, but also I think he suspects that it will not turn out great for him with the Warriors. He's seen it over 4 years where he goes in the lineup and out, in the lineup and out. And I have agreed with Steve Kerr at the end. Like if he doesn't fit with Jimmy Butler, exactly, and it isn't quite fitting with Steph Curry, then what are you going to do? What are you just going to force him out there? I would not say that that's the right move. That's not even the right mentality. So it feels like there's a long, extended, drawn-out conundrum, all these words, that should end up with him maybe signing a shorter-term deal with the Warriors that allows him to be traded in January and February, and they go find a deal at that point. It'll be easier to do at that point is what I'll say. This has just been tricky because the restricted free agency, there's no contracted deal. They got to figure out the contract. Then you got to figure out a trade. And I think, you know, most of us predicted this would get complicated. It's been complicated, and that's why it's been delayed.
No doubt. Tim Kawakami with us here on Willard and Dibs. Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard and the TK Show. Tim, before you get out of here, let's touch on the other team here in the Bay, the San Francisco Giants. We're now almost exactly a week away from the trade deadline, 3 o'clock Pacific next Thursday. Obviously, the Giants have already made the biggest trade in baseball this year in Rafi Devers over a month ago. What do you think comes at the trade deadline for the Giants the rest of the week? Do you feel like they make another move, another big move, a smaller move, or do you think Buster just says, this is the group of guys, you're going to have to make it work?
Yeah, I think likely to make a move, but I don't think they got enough to make a big move. I mean, I don't know what else they'd have to trade unless somebody is in love with one of their prospects, and we know they're not loaded there, and I don't think they're going to trade Bryce Aldridge. So, you know, I mean, I could see them getting a back-end starter. Obviously, Hayden Birdsong, you know, you don't know what you're going to get from him the rest of the season. You've been put a lot of load on Lana Roop. You know how much you can count on him. The younger pitchers might be fraying a little bit. Roop's pitched well recently. I could see them saying, listen, we got maybe give up our fifth best prospect for somebody's expiring contract who can fit in as a four starter. You know, how much more can they get out of Verlander? I mean, even expect out of Verlander after what he's done this season. I think something like that. I wouldn't expect them to just say, we're done, we're happy. I think they'd like to make some tinkering things. If it's somebody that they've been interested in, can they configure, it's not going to cost them a ton, and can give them, you know, eight good starts, eight solid starts the rest of the way, 10 solid starts the rest of the way. Even think about maybe a guy who can pitch a game in a playoff series. I think that's what they would be looking for. Now, those guys aren't just coming for nothing. So, I look around, and they don't have a lot to trade. That is the point. I mean, they gave up their biggest piece in order to get Devers. And Devers has got to be, better than he's been. Again, small sample size, I'm sure. He's a very good hitter. The numbers will come. But the best I think they can get, barring some team falling in love with some player that I can't picture right now, I think it's probably to get another starter. Now, then they probably could do better at second base, but I don't know that there's anybody out there who's going to be definitely better than Casey Schmidt. So they might be about what they are, and I would think the starting pitching would be where Buster Posey is most interested if he can find it. And I don't think it's going to be any top-of-line guy, right? I just don't think that. But somebody that they think they can plug in and give them six decent innings for the next few months to make sure that they're not really spinning badly at one of their starting rotations. Because they have an open spot right now, right? Birdsong is in the minors. They have an open spot right now. I think they would be interested in trying to fill that.
Interesting. Good stuff, Tim. We appreciate your time as always, and we'll keep our eye on the SF Standard and the TK Show. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there's Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard with us here on Willard and Dibs. Always great, Dibs, talking to TK, because you can just bounce around and talk about any team here in the Bay.
Touch them all, and I think that he's spot on everything and the whole idea about, the Giants. I don't think that they have any asset on the farm that they want to part with. If it's Wisenhunt and Eldridge and you don't want to part with either one of them, then what do you really have to bring in anything of a marquee level? He mentioned a possible expiring deal as a back-end starter. That could be something that pops off late. I still think that, Buster's already made his quote-unquote big move. The Kuminga conundrum, as you have called it, is, it goes on and on. And I do wonder about, I think it's August 12th would be the deadline where if you don't have a deal in place by then, I don't believe you could then trade him at the deadline, because I thought you had to have a six-month buffer.
So I looked into this, and I think for the Kuminga situation, I'll find the exact language. For the Kuminga situation, it's only a 3 month.
Okay.
So they could sign him at any point before the season and still would be able to trade him at the deadline.
Good. Yeah. All right. That at least, takes a little bit of the pressure off as far as the urgency.
But for those of us wanting a solution soon, be good news for that.
Well, it's already, we're almost through July. And we talked about June 30th when they could potentially make this happen. And then, the report from Sham Sharania today about him seeing Kuminga at a workout. And we can get into this on the other side, because it's one of my pet peeves and we can talk a little bit about it. But it doesn't feel like Kuminga is having any real urgency around it. He's just working out and trying to get better.
For Kuminga, the trade restriction when he re-signs is 3 months or January 15th, whichever comes later.
So, okay.
Yes. January 15th or 3 months after he signs, whichever is the later date.
So as long as it would be then before, November 12th.
Which that would be in season.
So that would be to the point where, he would be 3 months after that would be past the deadline. Correct. So, as long as it happens here before the beginning of October, we should be
safe, all set. Able to trade him before the deadline.
I mean, what are we doing? It's the end of July.
We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. It's Willard and Dibs, Dibs and Grandy with you, reacting to TK. There's also more sound that you're going to want to hear from Niners camp, and we do have to give you the updates, if we can really call them that, about Jonathan Kuminga and this whole situation. We'll do all that when we come back. It's Willard and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game.